All right, so we are holding on Samach Amar Aleph, last line. We said in the Mishnah, various things that a person is not allowed to wear on Shabbos in the Rabbanon. One of them is the Loi B'Yochid, that a person is not allowed to wear one individual shoe, Bizman Sha'in B'Ragle Masa, unless he has a wound on his foot, and then he's allowed to wear one shoe. So the question is, so implying, Hayesh B'Ragle Masa, nothing. So implying, okay, if he has a wound on his foot, then he's allowed to wear one shoe on Shabbos. So the question is, on which foot is he wearing it? The Heininai Nothing. Which foot are we talking about that then he's going to wear the one shoe on? Now, we have to keep in mind that when we learned in the Mishnah about this one shoe business, we mentioned two possibilities. Rashi had mentioned two possibilities. Why not? One was from the Yerushalmi, because people are going to think that he's carrying the other one someplace inside his clothes. And Rashi's Rebbeim explained because people are going to laugh at him, and then he may carry it, and then he may take it off and end up carrying it on Shabbos. So now the question is, given that we're giving him a heter to wear one shoe when he has a wound on his foot, which one should he wear it on, and that way avoid both of those problems? So Rav Huna says he should wear it on the one that has the wound. So in other words, his other foot will be barefoot, but the one that's hurt will have a shoe on it. Alma kasavah sandal shum tsar ovid, which means therefore that Rav Huna holds that essentially when a person wears shoes or sandals, the purpose of it is in order to avoid tsar, in order to keep himself from banging his feet on things on the road or stepping on rocks or whatever. So now what happens is, the person has an injury on one foot. People see him limping, therefore. So now when they see him wearing, when people see him wearing one shoe, then as far as the problem that they're going to think he's carrying the other one, they're going to realize he's not. They're going to realize this is a person who usually walks around barefoot. Usually he doesn't mind. His feet are tough enough that he's able to walk on the ground without a problem. In this case, because his foot is hurt, therefore he's walking around. Therefore he put a shoe on that foot, so that foot doesn't get banged up more. And the same thing, according to the explanation, that people are going to make fun of him. Nobody's going to make, even if they make fun of him, he's not going to take off the shoe off the injured foot and take the chance of injuring it. Okay, people are laughing at me. Fine, let them laugh. I'm not going to take off the shoe off the injured foot and walk with that foot barefoot and end up hurting it just because people are laughing at me. So therefore, so Rav Huna is saying, so that's how he should do it. The Chia Barav, Chia Barav says the opposite. What you do when you're wearing the individual shoe is you wear it on the foot that is not hurt. Alma kasava l'shum taimu ravid, which means therefore that Chia Barav holds that in general when a person wears shoes. When a person wears shoes, it's in order to make the walking more pleasant. Rashi describes actually odem istinis v'rach. You have a person who is delicate and sensitive. So when he's wearing one shoe, so like this. Normally he would be wearing two shoes. In this case, because one foot is hurt and people can see that, then therefore people understand that that's why he's not wearing the other shoe. So therefore, they're not going to be choshed at him, and they're not going to laugh at him. So that's the machlokes. Which foot does he have the heter to wear the shoe on? You actually have a machlokes rishonim. Which one of them the halacha should be like. The Ein Mishpat Ne'er Mitzvah over here refers to Chiyah Barav because that's what the Rambam and the Rif and Shulchan Aruch mentioned. But there are actually Rishonim who learn like the first version, like Rav Huna's version. What was the question?
How come the Gemara doesn't say that in some instances a shoe can aggravate a wound, and in some instances it can, on the contrary, protect the wound? It depends on the configuration of the shoe and the type of wound and the location of the wound.
That's true. That's true. So I guess the answer is we're not even talking about shoes here so much. We're talking about sandals. And as we said yesterday, a sandal is really, it's made very simply. It has a wooden bottom and it has leather straps that go over it. So there's really not much. So it's not like a shoe which surrounds the foot on all sides depending, as you said, where it is, it's likely to aggravate it. Here we're talking about where the person is just wearing something that covers his foot as minimally as possible.
So are you saying that this halacha applies only to sandals and not to shoes?
Well, so when it comes to shoes, you would have. Then it depends. I mean, for example, if you have somebody who has a cast, for example, then yeah, obviously his cast definitely shows. Now, first of all, nowadays you don't really have people that walk around barefoot. So you don't have Rav Huna's consideration that most people walk around barefoot you don't have the average person is not going to walk around barefoot. Such that we should say, if we see a person wearing shoes, oh, the only reason he's wearing shoes is because his foot is hurt. You don't have that nowadays. Nowadays, it's more normal to wear shoes. So almost everybody does. So if anything, that's my question. Right. So if anything, then you would say, so normally you expect him to be wearing two shoes. If you see him wearing only one shoe, you're not going to consider, like Rav Huna is saying, oh, well, it means he's only wearing one shoe because that foot is hurt. Just the opposite. Then we would presumably take Tia Barab's version, which is he's obviously wearing it because on the good foot and the bad foot it hurts. So either he's going to be wearing one shoe and it's going to be obvious that he's not wearing it on the other one because the other one is hurt, and when it's hurt, usually he would be wearing a cast on it or something, because otherwise he would still be wearing a shoe on it nowadays, or he's wearing two shoes, and then nobody notices anything.
But that's fine. It doesn't answer my question. My question is this. If he's wearing a shoe and his foot is injured and he wants to remove his shoe to protect his foot, can he do that or not?
Well, are you talking about removing it in the street on Shabbos? No, because what's he supposed to do with the shoe then? Are you talking
if he leaves the shoe behind him, he cannot walk with a shoe, period.
Well, then, so that's what I'm saying. In that case, it's called makos and mochakos. Nowadays that everybody wears shoes, then if he's wearing only one shoe, it seems it would be more obvious that he's doing it because his other foot is hurt, and he can't. I don't know, though. I mean, I'm not a rav, but I would have to imagine that's how it is. All right, let's go on. Okay. So the Gemara says, "V'afur Rav Yechanan Savala Lahadur Rav Huna." We can see from the following story that Rav Yechanan also holds like Rav Huna's version, which is that usually people go without shoes, and if you see a person wearing one shoe, it shows that the foot that he's wearing the shoe on is the foot that's hurt. Because the Amalei Rav Yechanan Rav Shimon Ba'aba Havli Masonai, because we know that one time Rav Yechanan said to Rav Shimon Ba'aba, give me my shoes to put on, and Yohid Leidi Yimin, and Rav Shimon Ba'aba started by giving him the right shoe, Amalei Afsisei Masa. And Rav Yechanan says to Rav Shimon Ba'aba, you shouldn't have done that. Now if I were to put on that shoe first, then it makes it look as though that foot has an injury. As the Gemara is going to explain in a second, Rav Yechanan held, you're supposed to put your shoes on left shoe first, which we're going to discuss that point. Here, all Gemara is going to be the famous question about this, the famous thing about how you're supposed to put on shoes, Al Pi Halacha. So Rav Yechanan held that you're supposed to put the left one on first, as we're going to see in a minute. So Rav Yechanan is saying, in effect, if you give me the right one first, if I were to put on the right one first, then I'm not able to put the left one on afterwards, and therefore it's going to look like my right foot has an injury. So you see, the fact that he says, Afsisoi, that if you made it, the pashas, it meaning his right foot, that the shoe goes on. it sounds, so therefore, in effect, it sounds like he's saying that the right, that you're going to make it look like the right foot has an injury, which means, therefore, that he holds like Ravona, that the one that has the injury is the one that you'd normally be wearing the shoe on. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. The Dilma, Chia Bar Rav's really, maybe not. Maybe Rav Yechanan actually holds like Chia Bar Rav's version. But Hakama, Asisa Shosmo Maka. Maybe he doesn't necessarily mean you're making it, meaning the right foot, looking like it has an injury. You're just looking it. You're making it. You're making it in general, the unspecified it, looking as though it has an injury. Because, in other words, then he'd be going out with only a, with only. Can be going out with only a right shoe, which according to Chia Bar Rav's version implies that he has an injury on his left foot, and why should we do that? So you can't really prove from this story one way or the other which way Rav Yechanan holds, like Rav Hona or like Chia Bar Rav. But now let's talk about that point about which shoe are you supposed to put on the person. But as Rav Yechanan l'taymei, so Rav Yechanan, when he says to Rav Shaman Ba'aba that you're not supposed to give me my right shoe first, because then I'd have to put it on, and then I can't put on my left shoe afterwards. Rav Yechanan is going according to his own svara. The Amr Rav Yechanan ketfilin. Rav Yechanan says that you put on shoes the same way, ketfilin kachmin orin. Putting on shoes is just like putting on tefillin. Ma tefillin b'smol, just like tefillin you put on your left arm. Achmin orin b'smol, the same way when it comes to shoes, you put on the left one first. Now, why? What's the connection? What's the connection between tefillin and shoes? So the Meiri actually says that there isn't really a connection, but the point is that a person, a Yorei Shamayim, a Talmid Chacham, should be doing everything that he should be doing. Should be that somehow he's mindful of Hashem when he's doing it. And in the case, so in this case, therefore, so what that means is even when he's putting on his shoes, which seems to be a very mundane activity, it doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything of kedusha. Nevertheless, he should be doing it in a way that that reminds him of putting on tefillin and the Kabbalah El Malchus Shemayim that goes with it. That's what the Meiri says. The expression he says on it is that Okedela Halos Alalev Inyan Shoshehe Munavah Yichud. In order to put in your mind the roots of belief in Hashem's oneness, which we accomplish by putting on tefillin. So even when you're putting on shoes, you should be doing that. Another point also, though, that Rav Akiva Eger makes a point in his Chiddushim, that there's actually a more direct connection between shoes and tefillin. Namely, the Gemara tells us in Cholin, when Abraham, after the battle with Sodom, after the war with the four kings, when the king of Sodom offers Abraham, Ten li anefesh varachush kach loch, you keep all of the spoils, I just want the people back. And Abraham tells him, I'm not going to keep anything, im michut v'ad tzrech now, not even a thread, not even a shoelace. And the Gemara tells us in Cholin that as a result of that, because he said, I'm not going to even take a shoe strap, therefore his descendants got the mitzvah of tefillin that involves putting them on the strap. So there's a direct connection, therefore, between tefillin and shoes. Anyway, the point is, so Rav Yechanan holds that, therefore he says that you have to put on the left shoe first. And the Gemara says, mate, you have a contradiction. And Braita says, true noyol, noyol sheyimin ba'achachach noyol shel smol. A braita says that when a person puts on his shoes, he should first put on his right shoe and then put on his left shoe. So what is it? So that's the opposite. That's the opposite of what that's the opposite of what Rav Yechanan is saying. Amr Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, okay, hashta d'tanya hachi v'amr Rav Yechanan hachi. Okay, so then okay, if we have a braita saying one way and we have Rav Yechanan saying the other way, and obviously Rav Yechanan is not going to knowingly argue with a braita. Then okay. So you can do whichever way you want, apparently. So you can do like Rabbi Yechanan is saying, or you can do like the Braita is saying. Tosfos says though, now Rabbi Yosef is not saying though that you can just do it at random. What you would have to do is you have to pick one way and stick with it. So if you want to regularly put on your left shoe first, like Rav Yechanan is saying, then okay, do that on an ongoing basis. Don't sometimes then go and put your right shoe on, which is why Rav Yechanan objected to Rav Shaman Ba'aba giving him his right shoe first. And if you always want to do like the Braise and put the right one on first, then do that. But one way or the other, stick to one way, Rav Yosef is saying. Okay, Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says why? Who says you're assuming that Rav Yechon, that what Rav Yechon is saying must be correct because of the Braise against it, and we know Rav Yechon can't argue with a Braise. Fine, but Dilma Rav Yechon, Hamas Nisal, I have a Shmuley. Maybe the fact is, maybe Rav Yechon didn't know what it says in this Braise. The E have a Shmuley, have a Hoderbe. Maybe in fact, if Rav Yechon had known that of this Braise, the Amoraim didn't always know. The Amoraim didn't always know all the Braises. Have a hoder bay. Maybe he would have changed his mind, and he would have actually started putting on his right shoe first, the way the Braise says. The E Nami Shmuele, or another possibility, maybe indeed Rav Yechonah did hear the Braise, because Saba ain't halacha, because he's a Mishnah. But he held the halacha is not like that Braise. So who says you're assuming that because you have Rav Yechonah said one way and the Braise says the other way, therefore you can do whichever you want. Maybe not. Maybe either you could say that the Braise has to take precedence because if Rav Yechonah knew of it, he would have changed his mind. Or maybe the other way around, what Rav Yechonah said takes precedence, and therefore because Rav Yechonah, we can say maybe knew of the Braise and said that I don't care. I still say that the halacha is not like that Braise. I still say there's a mistake. I still say that there's a mistake in that Braise. But how can Rav Yosef say that you can pick one or the other and stick with it? That doesn't seem to fit according to either of those possibilities. So the Nachman says actually what we should do is a Yorei Shemayim should be Yosef both opinions. And who is this Yorei Shemayim? Umanu Ma'abred Rabbana. For example, we can tell you what Ma'abred Rabbana did in order to be Yosef both of these possibilities. Heichi Ovid, what would he do? Siyam Biyamine, he would put on his white shoe first. Veloy Kotar, he wouldn't yet tie it. But sign the small Ava Kotar, then he would put on his left shoe and tie it. The Hadar Kotar, do you mean? And then he would tie his right shoe. Meaning, in other words, Tosfa says, whenever you're talking about something involving tying, the left goes first. Because that's what we mean. In other words, when we're saying that you're Yotza both of them, when Rav Yechonah was saying that you should put on the left shoe first, I mean, in his case, it actually meant putting on the shoe and tying it first. But nevertheless, what we're saying is, since the main thing about putting on the left one first is because of the association with tefillin, so then when you're doing something that directly involves tying the shoe or tying other kinds of clothing, then left goes first. But otherwise, as far in general, when it comes to putting on clothing, in general, right comes first. So that way you go to all of them. So you do that. Omer Rav Ashi, however, Rav Ashi says, Chazin of Rav Kahana, Delay Kofid, I actually saw my Rebbe Rav Kahana, who was not mastered on that. And he didn't, so he would do sometimes one way and he would do sometimes the other way. One possibility is it means he agreed with Rav Yosef that you can pick one and stick there. But on the other hand, we're saying that the Bach points out that that doesn't work because you're saying that even Abaya pointed out even we said before that Tosfos is explaining Rav Yosef to mean you still have to pick one way and stick with it. You can't just willy-nilly go back and forth. But therefore, so the Bach explains that actually Rav Kahana has a third opinion. He says that none of this is halacha. It's all, so therefore it doesn't really matter. You can do whatever you want. Now it's interesting, by the way. Usually, how is it in Shulchan Aruch? So usually we know that the Rav Yosef Karo, when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he usually took the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh as his main three poskim, and he passed them usually according to the majority between the three of them. Or sometimes we find he passed them according to one of them. But in this case, it's an interesting thing. Neither the Rif, nor the Rambam, nor the Rosh even bring this whole concept down as in halacha. that you have to put on your shoes and tie them in some order. And the Beis Yosef himself, in his Pirush on the tour, also says that evidently that said that it's not required al pi halacha, given that none of the poskim brought it. Nevertheless, the tour brings it, and the Mechaber, when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, also brings this concept, and so it got in the Shulchan Aruch, even though very few of the poskim before him even mention it as a matter of halacha. So that's how we do. So this is the source for what we do when we put on our shoes. Turn it up. Bonham, we learn in a brisa more on this topic. When a person puts on his shoes, noyel shall yamin ba'achakoch noyel shall smoil. He puts on his right shoe and then puts on his left shoe. And when he takes off his shoes, cholitz shall smoil ba'achakoch cholitz shall yamin. Then he takes off his left shoe first and then his right shoe, which is again to give more covered to the right side, so that way, in effect, the right side is covered with his shoe for a little longer. Similarly, the Braisa says, true roiches, when a person is bathing, roiches shall yamin v'achakach roiches shall smoil, he should first bathe, he should first wash the right side of his body, his right arm or whatever, then his left side. And when a person is smearing himself with ointment or oil or whatever, then again he does first the right and then the left. In general, in other words, we usually give precedence to the right because you have many different dinim in the Torah. You have many different dinim in the Torah where we see that the right is considered more important than the left. We have, for example, when it comes to the mitzvahs, ear, thumb, and toe. The Kohen puts the blood on his right ear, thumb, and toe, not his left one. Things that we have to take for a mitzvah, we take with the right hand. The Kohen, when he squiggles blood on the Mizeah, has to be doing it with the finger with his right hand, etc. So then, in general, avodah has to be done with the right hand. So the right hand is more important. So therefore, we always put the right first. And al pi kabbalah, al pi chassidus, also, of course, there's the idea: right is chesed, left is gvura, and we want chesed to be stronger than gvura. So only when it comes to tying things, do you tie left first. And the braisa finishes off. If a person is going to be smearing oil or ointment on his whole body, then he should first put on his head, because the head is the king over all of his evorim. The head controls everything that happens in the body, and therefore it's right to give it covered by washing it first.
I don't know if we're cognizant of the fact that really everything that's commanded to the left is originating from the right part of the brain and vice versa.
Well, that's true to a certain extent. There is cross wiring in the brain, but that's fine. For our purposes, that's neither here nor there. The way that we see things taking place is you have most mitzvahs when the choice which hand you're doing them in are done with the right hand, and only trillin are tied on the left hand, and of course even with trillin it's the right hand that's tying them on. So what the deeper meaning behind that originates the left side of the brain. I don't know what the deeper meaning of that would be.
Speech is on the left side of the brain, not the right side of the brain.
Okay.
And everything is inverse. And in Hasidus it explains that everything in spiritual is the reverse of everything material here. It's the opposite, actually.
Right.
Is that something that we should take into account?
I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means that we should take it into account. I mean, on the face of it, it means that. We know that in Kedusha, everything is always interrelated. We know that unlike in Klippa, where everything stands on its own, now we're in the middle of Sefirat Omer, right? The Chesed is incorporated into Gvura, and Gvura into Chesed, and so forth. So maybe this has to do with it. Maybe that has something to do with that. That we can't have that what's done with the right side of the body representing Chesed should be from the right side of the brain, because it can't be exclusively Chesed. It has to incorporate Gvura in it. I don't know. All right, let's go on. We said in the mission of Eloy B'Tfilin, we said, speaking of tefillin, that you're not allowed to wear tefillin outdoors on Shabbos. Omer of Safra, said of Safra, tells us, Loi tema alibu demanda omer Shabbos lab man tefillin hu. Don't think that, now, we mentioned yesterday that the Gemara has a long discussion about an Erevin, do you wear tefillin on Shabbos or not? Do you say that Shabbos is just as much a time to wear tefillin as weekdays, or do you say that not? As we, and of course, the halacha is like that opinion, and we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos because, as we know, tefillin are an ois, and Shabbos is an ois, and you don't need both of them at the same time. But you actually have a machoikas, and you have a whole discussion about it in the Gemara and Erevin. So Rav Sasser tells us, don't think when on Mishnah is saying you can't wear tefillin outdoors, that it's talking only according to the opinion, Shabbos, lav zman tefillin hu, ela, tefillin man de'omer, Shabbos, zman tefillin hu, even if you say that Shabbos is a valid time for wearing tefillin, nevertheless, you're still not allowed to wear them on Shabbos, lo yetzei, dilma ofila isuya b'shoset rabim, because you might end up carrying them in a shoset rabim. Now, why would you end up carrying them? So, Rashi mentioned the reason is because the reason is because you may have to take them off. You may have to go to the bathroom. Remember, they didn't have bathrooms inside the buildings in those days. A bathroom meant you went someplace outdoors, so you might have to go to the bathroom, and you're not allowed to do that in tefillin, and therefore you're going to end up taking them off, and you might end up carrying them in Rishus Adam. Tosfos brings a different gersa, which is that the problem is that the straps might break, and then you're going to carry them in Rishus Adam. So actually, Tosfos says you might need both reasons, because Tosfos brings from HaKadosh Mikorbel, HaKadosh, I guess, means that he was killed HaKadosh Hashem. Korbel was a city in France, so who he was, I don't know, but whatever it is. He explains that actually, he learns that you would be allowed to go into the bathroom with tefillin shel yad on, because tefillin shel yad don't have the shin on the outside of them, so therefore, there's not as much of an issue with going out with them, with going into the bathroom with them on Shabbos, even. So therefore, he says you need both reasons. You need a reason why not to wear tefillin shel rosh, namely because you might have to go to the bathroom, and you need a reason not to wear tefillin shel yad in the street on Shabbos because they may break and they might fall off, and then you're going to carry them. Okay. The Ika de Masni La Sefer, then you have others who learn Rav Safra's statement as actually referring to the Sefer, where the Mishnah had finished off the Yosef and Chayav Chatas, that if a person does wear tefillin or any of these other things mentioned in the Mishnah, he's not Chayav Chatas, so it's only also the Rabbanon. So then, on that version, Amr Rav Safra, Loi Tema Afiu Alibu Demand Amr Shabbos Zman Tefillin Hu, don't think that's only according to the opinion that Shabbos is Zman Tefillin, and therefore you're going to say that since it is a valid time to wear tefillin, then that's why you're allowed to wear them on Shabbos. Then that's why if you wore them on Shabbos in the street, you're not chayav chatas. But you would think that maybe according to the opinion that Shabbos loves man tefillin, maybe it's actually considered carrying. He says, don't think that. Ela filu l'manda omer Shabbos loves man tefillin. Even if you say that Shabbos is not the correct time to be wearing tefillin, nevertheless, ain't a chayav chatas, even that opinion, and which is the halacha, would agree that a person is not chayav chatas for wearing tefillin on Shabbos in the street. My timer, why is that derech malbush avida? Because the fact of the matter is, it is something that the person wears. He is wearing it. It is something that a person normally wears. Therefore, even though on Shabbos, when you're not supposed to be wearing tefillin, we can't consider it a burden that you're carrying not in a normal way. You have to consider it like an item of clothing or an item of ornament. And as we're saying throughout the parish, such things are also only d'rabbanan. And then you have the point that you mentioned yesterday, Eli, which the Gemara discusses in the last parish of Erevin, that if a person finds tefillin outdoors, if a person finds tefillin lying on the ground on Shabbos, then there are dinim about what he's allowed to do in terms of putting them on one or two pairs at a time and carrying them someplace safer. So again, that would only work if we said that they're not considered a masa. If they were considered a masa, you wouldn't be able to do that. Okay. Then we said in the mission of Eloi b'kameya mizman she'enim min amuncha. We said a person is not allowed to wear on Shabbos a kameya, which is an amulet, which as we're going to see in the Gemara, it can be a bundle. The word kameya basically means a bundle or a knot or something. So either it contains a parchment or a paper or whatever that has some kind of lachash on it, some kind of spell or names of Hashem or names of Malachim or what have you. Or the Gemara, as I mentioned later, you have another kind of kameya, which is made from various kinds of herbs or roots or whatever that have medicinal value that are tied up. The point is the person wearing the kameya tied to themselves somehow. It could be, as the Gemara is going to say later, you could have that the person has an attack, that the person ties it onto a piece of their clothing or whatever, and the Gemara is going to say you can't do that on Shabbos. Or you could have they wear it on a cord around their neck or around some other body part. So the Mishnah is saying that if the Kameya is not min ha-mumcha, then mean that it's not from an expert, and as we're going to see in the Gemara, that an expert means that it works three times, then you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos. In other words, the implication is if it is min ha-mumcha, you are allowed to wear it on Shabbos. So now we're going to be going into a long discussion over here of what exactly is needed in order to make a kameya mumcha. And it's going to be a little bit complicated, actually, because you have Rashi's opinion versus Tosfos's, and what Rashi's saying seems to change his mind partway through. So we'll see what we can do with it. One interesting point, though, the Me'iri asked to begin with. In general, we know the Chachamim usually answered things that for medicinal purposes on Shabbos, because the Chachamim were concerned that you're going to grind up spices for the purpose. We mentioned this briefly in the first parak and here and there. So why over here are they allowing you to wear a kameya on Shabbos? Now, obviously, we're not talking about where pikuach nefesh not to wear it. That's fine. Pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos and most other mitzvahs as well. But where it's not a matter of pikuach nefesh, for example, the person could just avoid going outside on Shabbos, then why are we allowing it? So, and he gives two reasons. One, he says, is because given that a kameya works supernaturally, or at least not by any known medical way, then a person is not going to come and try to do something like this and end up making medicine on Shabbos, because the fact is it works completely differently than regular medicine works. And also, he says that the body doesn't even feel the effect of it. The effect of it is basically on the neshama. Because again, it's a ruchniistic thing or a supernatural thing rather than something natural like regular medicine. And therefore, again, he says that the iser of refuah on Shabbos is only things that the body actually feels. Okay. So let's talk about what it means a kameya that's min ha-mumcha. Amar Papa. So the Papa says, first of all, loy tema. Ad mumcha gavra or mumcha kameya. Don't think that in order to be allowed to wear the kameya on Shabbos, you have to have that the person who made it is known to be an expert, is known that he already wrote three successful kameyas, and that the kameya itself has to be mumcha as well, that it has to have worked three times. Ella, no, Republic says it's enough kibna mumcha gavra, afagabdalay mumcha kameya. It's enough that the person is known to be a mumcha, even if this particular kameya has not. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, so let's say you have a person, so mumcha gavro, mumcha kameya, Rashi explains, would mean that he wrote this kameya, he wrote this particular spell for three different people, and it worked for them. So now this person is a mumcha. Now we see he healed three different people, and the ksav itself, the lachash itself, the spell itself that he wrote, helped three different people. That would be one example where both the person and the kameya are now mumcha. They're both now mumcha. I mean, mumcha, we use the word mumcha to mean expert, but really a better translation of it is validated. If it's now been validated that this person is able to write successful kameyas, and it's validated also that this particular lachash works for three different people. So that would be one example. Or another example, Rashi says he wrote three different kameyas for three different sicknesses for three different kinds of people. So that would also be once he wrote three different kinds, then now he's now considered a mumcha as far as anything that he would write in the future. So the kameya itself now, since it works for three different people, then it means that whether he writes it or whether somebody else in the future would write the same spell, then it obviously is shown to work. So Rav Papa is saying you don't need all of that. Even if only the person is already validated that his kameyas work, even though this particular one is not. which means Rashi says. So let's say, for example, that he wrote three different Timaeus for three different people, and they all worked. So now he's writing a new one. Now he's writing a fourth kind. So we don't know that this new spell that he's writing actually works. He's never tried it before. But because we see that he already has a track record of writing three of them, and they work, so now we can assume that any one that he writes in the future is going to work. So therefore that would be allowed. On Omen Bay, Rashi gives an example. A Zerach like you have, for example, if an ox gores three different animals, then we say it's not just that it's moored for those three animals. We say it's moored for all animals in the future. Obviously, it's a wild animal. It's going to attack whatever it sees. So the same way over here, Rashi says, this person who wrote three different Kameas for three different people, and all of them work, it shows that now any Kamea that he writes is going to be successful. A Tosfos and a lot of others are showing him have a lot of problems with Rashi's explanation, so we'll get to, as we go along, how they explain it. Okay, so the Gemara says, though, at any rate, so the Papa is saying again that it's enough that the person has been validated. You don't need that it works three times. You don't need that this particular Kamea has been validated three times. I mean, what is Dekanami? In fact, you can see that clearly from the wording of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says, you're not allowed to wear a kameya when it's not min ha-mumcha. It doesn't say when he is not mumcha. When he is not mumcha would imply that if the Mishnah had used the expression b'zman she'enei mumcha, it would mean, it would mean the kameya itself has to have been known to be mumcha. It has to have been validated three times. But the fact that the Mishnah doesn't say that, the fact that the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to wear it when it's not min ha-mumcha implies that if it is min ha-mumcha, that if it is from somebody who's been validated three times, then that's good enough. And then we don't care that this particular Kamea doesn't have a track record yet. So that proves it, that's what it means. You don't need that both the person and the Kamea are mumcha. It's enough the person is known to write good Kameas, and from now on any Kamea that he writes is good. Okay, I mean, Tosfos points out, it is possible also for a person to lose that certification. You could have that he wrote Kameas, and now he writes three more, and they don't work. So now he's back to what he was. However, the Kameas that he wrote when he was still effective are still considered to work, even though he himself lost the certification. Okay. What is considered a kameya mumcha for this purpose? Kol shiripa v'shana v'shilish, where the kameya helped one, two, and three times different people, the same sickness. Now we're going to see according to Rashi, at least, it doesn't even have to be that different people. According to Rashi, even if it's all one person that is healed three different times from the same sickness, is enough. Is enough to show that it works. We'll revisit that point on the day. Echad kameya shel ksav ve'echad kameya shel ikrin. All of this applies whether we're talking about a kameya that involves writing, where the person writes out names of Hashem or names of Malachim or other such things. Or whether it's commercial ikrin, whether it involves herbs that are tied up into a bundle and put around the person's neck or whatever. Echad chola sheyesh be'sakana, ve'echad chola she'ein be'sakana. It also applies equally whether we're talking about the person is dangerously sick or is not dangerously sick. Either way, he's allowed to go out with it on Shabbos because, even when it's not a matter of pikuach nefesh, as we learned in the Mishnah, it's considered a tachshit. It's considered an ornament for a person. And there's also Rashi explained it, but there's no concern that he's going to take it off, in the street, because the whole point is he knows he has to be wearing it the whole time in order for it to be effective. So he's not going to take it off and carry it in the street.
Can you carry a mezuzah around your neck as an ornament, as a kameh on Shabbos, if you believe that there is
Just because you believe doesn't mean anything. It would have to be, as we're saying over here, it would have to be that it was mumcha. It would have to be that either you have this person wrote, you didn't have to have, but this sofer wrote three mezuzahs, and each one of them has been shown to help a person with keeping him from sickness, or that this mezuzah has helped three people, or the same person three times, or whatever. But if you just have, if you believe that a mezuzah is going to help, that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
But if it's been shown to help, then you could.
Then it would be pashtus. It would be like a kameh. But again, what does it mean that it's been shown to help? I mean, you would have to have, let's say, three people. That are susceptible to a certain sickness, and they wore this mezuzah on their neck three times. They wore the mezuzah on their neck, and all three of them didn't catch it. Let's say then you could say maybe that's mumcha, I guess. Tosfos at the beginning of the parak also pointed out that the person would even be allowed to untie it and retie it on in Rosh Hashanah. We're not concerned that if he unties it, he's going to carry it. Because actually, Tosfos says you can't really make such a gzera because if he remembers that it's Shabbos and when he unties it, he's not going to start carrying it. And again, he wants to keep it on because of the help, because of the protection that it gives him. And if he's not going to remember, then it doesn't do any good to make a gzera because he's not going to remember that you're not allowed to anyway. So therefore, so Tosfos says that actually he would actually be allowed to untie it and retie it on to be more comfortable or whatever in Rosh Hashanah, and we're not concerned that he's going to carry it. Okay. And the Braisa continues, Loishen Nichta, we don't even mean that the person is allowed to wear the Kameya if he already had an epileptic fit. So this is it's not the only thing that a person might use a Kameya for, but it's an example. A person might be prone to seizures, and therefore he wears a Kameya in order to protect him on that. So we're saying not only a person who has previously had seizures is allowed to wear a Kameya on Shabbos, he's even allowed to wear it if let's say he comes from a family of epileptics, of people who have seizures, and therefore he's afraid that he is prone to that also, and he wears a kameya in order to prevent that, then he's allowed to do that also. And as we just said, he's allowed to tie it and untie it even in Rosh Hashanah. We're not concerned that he's going to carry it, because as we said before, as Tosfos had said, you can't make such a gzeira, because if you remember that it's Shabbos when he unties it, then he's not going to carry it, and if he doesn't remember, then a gzeira is not going to do any good. Although Vad, however, the Braisa says, as long as Shelo Yitzurenu Basher over Tabas V'yetzer Boi Rosh Hashanah, but he's not allowed to tie it to a bracelet or a ring and go out with it in Rosh Hashanah, in other words, it has to be tied someplace onto his actual body, mishum maris ayin, because then it just looks like he's wearing it just as a tashit, and then you have the problem that then he's not wearing it in the normal way, and it's going to look like he's just carrying it in order to take it from point A to point B. Okay. So thus far the braisa, so we have the basic idea of what a kameya is. So now we're going to analyze that. So first of all, the question is that you're telling me that a kameya, in order to be considered mulcha, in order to be considered validated, has to have healed three times, bahatanya, but we learn in a different writer, a zel kameya mulcha. What is the definition of a kameya mulcha? Kol shirita gimu b'nei adam ke'echad. Where it healed three people at once, and that necessarily means if you say ke'echad, so that would mean it can't mean the same kameya being used for three different people, because obviously therefore you can't put the same kameya on three people at the same time. So obviously we have to be talking about three different kameyas, each one given to a different person, and we're saying that is considered mumcha. So the first braisa says that you need the kameya to have worked three times, and Rashi explains the point of the question is that in the first braisa we see that it's good enough even if it was only one person, and here we're saying it needs to be three different people. Now, one point is also Rishonim mentioned another point as well, that you have the chiddush of if it was ke'echad that it works, because you might think that maybe the mazel of that time was particularly effective. Maybe you would say, in other words, that maybe at other times this kameya is going to be less effective. But if punkt happens, if these three people happen to wear it, punkt wore it on a day that's especially mazel. You don't say that. You would say that the kameya itself is is valid. You also have, by the way, a point which Rashi had explained that when we say a kameya becoming mumcha, we mean the script that's written inside it. Rashi learns that once you have a person has written a certain spell or a certain thing with particular names of Hashem and Malachim or what have you, and it works three times, that means anybody else could write that same one and it would work, is what we're saying so far. Tosfos says that it would have to be the very same kameya. So then, according to Tosfos, the question is that we said before that you have to have the same kameya three times. Here we're saying even if three different kameyas, even though they all have the same spell in them, let's say, nevertheless, it's still considered mumcha. So what does that mean? Obviously, it doesn't have to be the same exact piece of paper then. And the answer is, like Kasha, holam chuyi gabra, holam chuyi kameya. There's a difference between saying that the person is expert, that the person, the one who wrote it, is validated, versus saying that the kameya itself is invalidated. So again, according to Rashi, what we're saying is, in other words, when the first braisa mentions three different people, is because the pashtus, when you have three different people, usually it would be they have three different illnesses. So the fact that it's different illnesses is not really the important thing. The point is it's three different kinds of kameyas. Well, yeah, it is. The fact that it's different illnesses means that it's generally going to be different kind of kameyas, because the pashtus, you have to have different combinations of names and malachim and whatnot for different kinds of illnesses. So therefore, once the person has written three different ones, and all of them work, each one for a different person, then we know that now this person, as Rashi had said, it's like the ox that gores, now we know that this person has been validated, that any kameya that he writes in the future is going to work. As opposed to, that's the first braisa. And then the second braisa that mentions that it healed three different people, the second one that says Kol Shavuot Gimel B'nei Adam would mean, Rashi says, it doesn't even have to be three different people. It could even be the same person, and it works for one person three times, or it could even be three different people, but the same illness. So each time it was the same spell. So therefore, now what we have is the spell itself, we know for a fact, works. So therefore, anybody else who writes it is good. That can mean, depending whether it was one person or three people, will tell us also whether the person who wrote it is now a mumcha or not. Again, that's all according to Rashi, Tosfos, and other Rishonim have a problem with that. For one thing, just because a person was able to heal three illnesses doesn't mean that he's able to heal all of them. So they give a different explanation, among others, that when we say the kameya itself, we mean the actual piece of paper itself, not just the spell that's on it. And therefore there's a difference between whether the person is known that his kameyas work versus we know that this piece of paper is effective for different people. There's a point that Rishonim bring, though. There's a point they bring in the name of Rabbeinu Yohanan to defend Rashi, which is that after all, what do we mean the person is an expert? We don't necessarily mean that he's smart enough to know what lachash will work for different things. We mean that it's the fact that he's a tzaddik, the fact that his tefillahs help and whatever, and the fact that he writes this or that particular spell is really the less important thing. Because he's a tzaddik and because he knows the various names of Hashem and the various names of Malachim that are involved, then therefore he's able to write kameya. So once he writes three different ones for three different illnesses and they all work, so yes, we can say, like Rashi says, now it shows that obviously he knows his way around. He knows his way around the ruchniyistic world, and he knows, and he's going to be able to do this for any person. Okay. Fine. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says I want to ask a question, but I'm going to preface it with a couple of things that are obvious. I'm going to puzzle, particularly. It's obvious to me as follows. If a person wrote three different kameyas for three different peoples, and for three different sick people, and each one of them helped three times, there's no question, ismichi gabra v'ismichi kameya, there's no question that then now you have both the person as a mumcha, and now whatever kameya he writes in the future are going to work, and also that the kameya itself works, that there, again, according to Rashi, the particular spell, according to Tosfos, the particular piece of paper is also known to be effective. So therefore, all of those kameyas can be worn on Shabbos, no question about it. In fact, Tosfos points out, you wouldn't even necessarily, so it's come out, in other words, Rapapa is saying that if you have nine times, three times three from this person, then it works. Tosfos points out, you don't even really need nine. Five is enough. You have, let's say, for example, you have three different people, each one with a different sickness, and he wrote a different kameya for each one, and they worked. So now you have the person is known to be a mumcha. Then one of them was sick two more times with the same thing and wore the kameya, and it helped. So now you also have that the kameya is known to be effective. So Rapapa says that part is obvious. Also, continues Rapapa, Tlosa Kameya Tlosa Gavi, if you have that three different Kameyas were written for three different people, Chad Chad Zimna, and each one helped one time, okay, once we do that, Gavri Ismichi Kameya La Ismichi, then we know at this point the person is a mumcha, the Kameya is not yet, because the Kameya, each Kameya only worked one time. And Chad Kameya Latlosa Gabri, and if it's the other way around, if he wrote one type of Kameya for three different people, and it worked, Kameya Ismichi Gabri Loi Ismichi, then we say the Kameya is validated, but not the person. The person who wrote it is not necessarily okay. So we know that this kind of kameya that he writes works, but we don't know that it'll work with other kinds of kameyas. So all of that Rapapa says is obvious, but now we have a question. Boy Rapapa, plus the kameya lachad gadra. What happens if the three kameyas were all written for one person? So you had a person who had three different illnesses at different times, and each time the kameyas that this guy wrote for him worked. My, so now what is the din? So we can say kameya vadele ismichi. We know for a fact, okay, the kameya itself that he wrote each individual time is not yet mumcha, because each one only helps one time, and we're saying that you need three times for it. But Gavra ismichi oyloi ismichi, do we say that the person who wrote them is now a mumcha or not? Because on the one hand, he wrote three different kameyas, but on the other hand, you could say, as Gemara is going to say, you could say that maybe the mazel of the patient, of the one who received the kameya, is the one that's affected. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, when you have a reason to say that it's based on the mazel or the expertise of the doctor, then you're going to say that. But over here, what you have is the fact is that so okay. What Rashi says is like this. Let's finish the question and then we'll discuss what Rashi says on it and what the others are trying to say on it. So that's the question. So the person had three different illnesses. He had three different illnesses. This particular tzaddik wrote for him, or this particular doctor wrote for him three different kameyas, one for each one, and each one helped for that particular illness. So now the question is that doctor or that tzaddik now known that any kameya he writes is going to be successful from now on, and therefore you're allowed to wear his kameyas on Shabbos? On the one hand, you could take the view, mi amrin ha asilei. On the one hand, you can say, look, he was able to heal him three different times, so that should be enough to make him a mumcha. Or maybe not. Maslo dahai gavro hu dekama kabok sava. Maybe what made the difference is the mazel, the ruchniyistik source of the person's neshama, of the one who received it, dekama kabok sava, the one who received the kamehs. That maybe even you write for him a kamea, which wouldn't work for most people. Maybe he has an extra strong mazel, which helps that even that works for him. And now Rashi points out, we had at the top of the Amud, we had the case where we had the case that, not the top of the Amud, the bottom of the previous Amud rather, we had the first Braisa that we quoted in this connection, mentioned that he's a mumcha if it healed three times, even if it was one person. So doesn't that answer the question? So Rashi answers that no, because you could say that when you would more logically assume that the Kamea itself has a power, because you're not going to assume that a Kamea itself is a weak one and it only helps with the person's mazel unless there's a strong reason to say that. Normally, you would assume the Kamea itself is the thing that had the effect through Hashem's bracha. So therefore, more logically, you would assign the success to that rather than the person's mazel. But over here, when you don't have a reason to think that it's the power of the Kamea, because after all, each one over here only worked one time, so therefore, it's more logical to say that it's the mazel of the person who received them. So that's your public question. And it's more of a teiku, and we can't answer the question. So again, there's a lot of different concerns that the Rishonim have with Rashi's explanations on this. One of them is that we say that if we're saying that in general we try to attribute it to the Kamea, then we're not, and we don't want to attribute it to a person's mazel, then why is Rashi earlier saying that we do attribute it to the mazel of the doctor when possible? So that, and you have, again, the Gemara seems to be implying, when we said it before, about Gimel B'nai Adam Ke'echad, seems to be implying that you're talking about the same Kamea that's being used multiple times, not just the same spell. So because of that, you have a couple of different explanations of Rishonim on the subject. So the Tosfos HaRosh summarizes what Rashi's opinion would be, that if the same type of Kamea works for three different people, then that type of Kamea is now considered Mumcha. The doctor himself is not yet a Mumcha as far as other kinds of Kameas, because if a different person writes it, it also wouldn't necessarily be successful. If it was one person with the same illness three times, if it was three different people with the same kind of illness, each one only one time, then the Kamea is now Mumcha, but the doctor is not. If it was three different people with three different illnesses, and each one, then he's a Mumcha, and the Kameas are not yet, because each one hasn't worked three times. And if it was three different people, three different times, three different illnesses, then the person is Mumcha, and the Kamea is Mumcha. And you have the proper topic about if it was one person with three different illnesses and three different Kameas. That's how the Rosh summarizes Rashi's opinion. So again, you have different opinions about it among Poskim. In Shulchan Aruch, in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, he spends about seven or eight sifim dealing with these detailed dinim of Kameas. So he summarizes, therefore, that if the person were, so if he wrote one, again, according to Tosfos, that it's not so much the actual spell that he wrote, but the actual piece of paper. So if a person wrote one particular lachash in three different pieces of paper, and it helped three different people, so now he's a mumcha, that anytime he writes the spell in the future, it'll be a kamea that you can wear on Shabbos. The kamea itself is not mumcha, because the fourth piece of paper has never actually been used to heal anybody. And if somebody else were to write it, it also wouldn't work, because the mumcha himself didn't write it. And then you have the various other permutations of the Kameya itself. Would be Mumcha is you wrote one piece of paper, and that piece of paper itself works three times. Again, according to Tosfos, that's what it means that the Kameya is Mumcha, not that the spell works, but that the actual piece of paper, the physical piece of paper itself, works three times. And then you have, again, now that it goes on over there with one halacha after another about the details of when the person is Mumcha, when the Kameya is Mumcha, how he loses his Mumcha status if it turns out that after a while they stop working, etc. Okay. Ibailu. So now, since we're talking about Kameyas, let's ask another question. Kameyin, yesh behen mishum kedusha, or yoma ein behen mishum kedusha. A Kameya, again, it may have in it names of Hashem, or names of Malachim, or Psukim, or other such things, but does it have kedusha or not? So the question is, well, my hilksa, as far as relevant to what halacha is that, regarding what halacha would that be relevant? Are you going to say the question is, if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, are you allowed to save them in the way that you would save Kisvei HaKodesh? Later on, in the 16th Perek, we're going to talk about the dinim of what happens if a fire breaks out in a house, Chas V'Shalom, what you're allowed to do in order to save things that are in the house and whatnot. We have that the rules are a little bit, when it comes to Kisvei HaKodesh and certain other things, there are certain, the rules of Shabbos are relaxed a little bit. We're not talking about, again, where the Sakonis Nefosh is involved. There you're allowed to call the fire department to put out the fire, which generally is the case nowadays. We're talking about when there's no Sakonis Nefosh is involved, only Sakonis Mammon. So you're not allowed to break Shabbos in order to put out the fire or call a goy or what have you. But what you are allowed to do, it describes over there, is Kisvei HaKodesh and certain other things. You're allowed to take them into a different chaser, even if that chaser does not have an Eruv with yours. So you have, and keeping the chaser itself is a Rishus HaYachid Daraisa, because it has walls or fences or whatever around it. Only Midrabanan do you have an issue because they haven't made an Eruv with you before Shabbos. But in this case, Kisvei HaKodesh, you're allowed to save and bring them to such a chaser. So you're going to ask them, so you're going to say that the question we're asking is, as far as that, these Kameyas, if they have names of Hashem or Psukim or what have you in them, are you allowed to carry them to a chaser that you don't have an Eruv with on Shabbos? You don't need to ask the question. Toshma, because we have a Braisa. Habrochas Bakameyan, brochas that are written out, like a sinner, even though they have Psukim in them. For example, you have, let's say, what brochas have Psukim on them. For example, you have the brochas of Musaf, of Rosh Hashanah, having them the Psukim, of Malchus, the Chorinus, and Choisus. So let's say you have such brochas are written down. Now, in the times of the Gemara, you weren't allowed, in the times of the Gemara, you weren't allowed to write down brochas yet. They're still part of Torah Shabbat there. So back the brochas, back Kameyan, and Kameyas, like we're talking about, Alphapi Sheyeshtehen Oisiyos, even though they have in them letters of Hashem's name, or even full names of Hashem, Umin Yonis Havish of HaTorah, even though they have many concepts of Torah in them, because, for example, you have Psukim in them, you have Psukim in the brochas, you have Psukim of the four in the Kameya, nevertheless, you do not save them for on Shabbos from a fire by bringing them to a chaser that does not have an Eruv with it. You just have to leave them to get burnt where they are. So if you have some other way, we're going to learn in the 16th paragraph, we're going to learn various possible ways that you're allowed to save things on Shabbos, but you're not allowed to bring them to a different place. You're not allowed to bring them to a chaser which doesn't have an Eruv in order to save them on Shabbos. So that Braisa clearly says, therefore, that you can't save them in that way from a fire on Shabbos. So what's the question? So what's the question, whether they have kedusha or not? Elo le'inyin gniza. So you're going to say the question was as far as whether you have to put them in Sheamus. When they wear out, do you have to put them in Sheamus? No, Toshma, we learn in a Braisa. Hoya kosov al yidoita kelim. Suppose you have a name of Hashem written on the handle of a keli. The Alkari Amnita, or on the legs of a bed. So what do you do with them? You're not allowed to just use them any old way because they have kedusha because of Hashem's name. So therefore you wouldn't just be able to throw them away or whatever. Yogud, what you should do is cut off the part of the handle or the leg or whatever that has Hashem's name, the Yignezenu, and put it in Shemus. So So therefore, so we see, therefore, so the same thing would be true as far as a Kameya. So what's the question, whether it has Kedusha or not? Obviously, it has Hashem's name, so it has Kedusha. So the question is, are you allowed to go wearing a Kameya into the vacuum? That's the question. Yesh ben Kedusha v'Osir. Do we say that the Kameya has Kedusha because it has Hashem's name or it has Pesukim or whatever in it, therefore it would be Osir to walk into the bathroom wearing it? Yoma ain ben Kedusha v'Shari. Or maybe they don't have Kedusha because after all, they're not written for the purpose of learning from or whatever. You could almost say that these names of Hashem are written you could say for decorative purposes. They're not written l'shem kedushas Hashem because they're not meant to be learned from or whatever. They're meant to be as an amulet, as a kameya to protect the person. So maybe therefore they're not considered to have kedusha and you'd be allowed to go with them into the bathroom. So toshma. So let's look back at our Mishnah. We said, we said you're not allowed to wear a kameya if it doesn't come from an expert, or as we said, if the kameya is not expert, if the kameya is not validated, if the person who wrote it is not validated, etc., then you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Implying homina mumcha nafik, implying therefore that if it was written by a mumcha or the kameya itself is known to be mumcha, then you are allowed to wear it outside on Shabbos. Now, if you're going to say that Yamit Kameya Yeshba and Mishum Kedusha, if you're going to say that a Kameya has Kedusha, why should you be allowed to? Just like we said on Amud Aleph about Tefillin, that you're not allowed, that even if we say that you wear Tefillin on Shabbos, you're not allowed to outside because you may have to take them off when you go to the bathroom. The same thing. It could happen that the person has to go to the bathroom and he's going to have to take off the Kameya, but also it's a unit, Dalar Amas Rosh Hashanah, and he's going to end up carrying it for Amas and Rosh Hashanah. Obviously, if we're not concerned about that, means therefore the Kameya doesn't have Kedusha, and you don't have to take it off when you go to the bathroom. The Gemara says not necessarily. Because maybe, you know what, when the Mishnah is allowing you to wear a Kameya outdoors, maybe it's talking about only the kind that has herbs in it, that has herbs and spices and whatever in it that have medicinal value. But that kind, okay, of course, there's no Kedusha in it, there's no names of Hashem or anything. So that kind you'd be allowed to wear on Shabbos because even if you have to go to the bathroom, you don't have to take it off. Maybe the kind that has Hashem's name or Pesukim or whatever, you wouldn't be allowed to wear it into the bathroom. Maybe you wouldn't be allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Well, so that doesn't work. V'atanya echad kameya shoktav echad kameya shalikud. What do you mean? The Braisa has said, the Braisa that was quoted at the bottom of Amar Aleph says whether it's a kameya with writing or whether it's a kameya with herbs. So it doesn't matter. Either way, apparently, you're allowed to wear it on. Either way, you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. And apparently, we're not concerned about that. You might have to go to the bathroom. So that shows that it doesn't have kedusha. Okay, the Gemara says Ella Hachamayasin b'chodesh yesh b'sakana. Okay, maybe we're talking about maybe the Mishnah is only allowing it if the person's life is going to be in danger if he takes off the kameya. So then he's going to be allowed to go into the bathroom because of the koach nefesh. What do you mean? The same Braita that said whether he's a Chola Sheyesh Beisakana or not, either way, he's allowed to wear the Kameya on Shabbos. So even though he's a Chola Sheyesh Beisakana, and he could conceivably take it off for a couple of minutes, and his life's not going to be in danger, because B'chlal, the illness that he has is not a life-threatening one, and still we're allowing him to wear it on Shabbos. Implying, therefore, that he doesn't have to take it off when he goes into the bathroom, which in turn implies that it doesn't have Kedusha. Okay, so the Gemara says not necessarily. El of Kibin de Masi, maybe you could say like this. Maybe since the Kameya is healing him or preventing him from getting sick or whatever, Afa Gav the Nukit Lebi Yodei Nami Shaper Dami, maybe it would work even if he actually holds it in his hand. So therefore, you would say that maybe we would consider it a passage for him even if he's not wearing it around his neck or tied around his arm or what have you. Maybe even if he's carrying it in his hand, it would still be considered a tachshit because it's still effective in that way. So maybe, therefore, on a d'oraisa level, he wouldn't be chayav for carrying it on Shabbos. And maybe, therefore, the Chachamim are not going to make a zera. Like the Chachamim don't make one zera on top of another. They're not going to make a zera that you're not allowed to carry it on Shabbos, and on top of that, make a zera, therefore, that you're not allowed to wear it because you might take it off and you might carry it on Shabbos. Maybe we could answer that way. Maybe we could answer. In other words, it's different. Other kinds of accessories and jewelry and whatever that we've been mentioning so far in the Perek are only, they do their job when you're wearing them. So therefore, the Chachamim are concerned that you might take them off and carry them. You might take them off to show off to your friends or whatever and carry them. And then the person will be chayav chatos for carrying them because, for example, holding a piece of jewelry, there's no question really an Isser Shabbos Nedaraisa. But maybe you could say a kameya is different. The fact that the kameya works even if you're holding it, you don't necessarily have to have it tied onto your body or hanging from someplace on your body, maybe is reason enough to say that you're not chayav on a daraisa level even for carrying it, and therefore the rabbanon aren't going to prevent you from wearing it on Shabbos, because even if you do end up going to the bathroom and taking it off and carrying it, you're not going to be over on isur daraisa. Rab Oshia clearly says that you're allowed to wear the kameya, but as long as you don't actually take it off and carry it for amos in Rosh Hashanah. So we see, therefore, that Rav Oshia is saying that even on a daraisa level, you're not allowed to. The kameya is only effective when you're wearing it around your neck or tied to some other part of your body. So that doesn't work either. So that should imply, if the kameya has kedusha, we should be aftering it because you may have to go to the bathroom and then take it off. The fact that we're not aftering it on those grounds seems to imply that the kameya doesn't have kedusha, even though it has names of Hashem in it. Okay, the Gemara says that's still not a proof. Ella, hachamayiskin v'machupa ur. No, because you could say, you know what, why is the Mishnah allowing you to wear the kameya? Because it's covered with a leather, You write the names of Hashem or the Malachim or whatever. And then you wrap it inside a piece of leather and you sew it up or whatever and it stays permanently inside that leather cover. So you could say that kind you're allowed, because even if you have to go into the bathroom, okay, it's covered up. So therefore, you would be allowed to go with it into the bathroom. Not necessarily would that show that the writing in and of itself doesn't have kedusha. So the question is, why? How does that work? That is tefillin the mechupa'er. What do you mean? Tefillin are covered with leather, because you have the parashiyas of the tefillin are inside leather batim, v'tanya, and we learn in brachas, hanichas of beis hakiseh. If a person has to go to the bathroom, cholat tefillin berichuk aba amos, he has to take off his tefillin at least 4 amos away from the bathroom, the nichnas, and only then can he go in. So you see that even though it's covered with leather, it doesn't help. So why by a kameya should it help? The answer is, the Gemara says, because a hosam is from shin. The difference is because it's not so much the parashiyas that are inside the batim. The problem is, though, that you have the shin on the outside of the bias of the shorosh, the two shins, actually, the three-headed and the four-headed ones on the two sides. And the Amar Abayis, shin shofkim on Allah al-Moshe Mishinai. And Abayis says, we learned it earlier in the Masechta, that the shin on the outside of the tefillin has to be there halacha l'moshe mitzinai, and it's considered part of kisvei hakodesh. Therefore, you would say that's why you can't wear tefillin into the bathroom. But in the case of a kameya, you don't have any shin or anything like that on the outside of it. The outside is just a plain piece of leather. Therefore, maybe it would be allowed. And by the way, the Gemara mentions the Omer Abaye Dalad Shotzil and Alacha Moshe Mitzinai, the Omer Abaye Yud Shotzil and Alacha Moshe Mitzinai. Also, Abaye says you should know the Dalad knot that's in the back of the Shorosh is also Alacha Moshe Mitzinai. The Yud knot is also Alacha Moshe Mitzinai. Actually, Rashi has an interesting explanation. Rashi has an interesting statement over here that the Yud doesn't necessarily have to be a knot. The Yud can just be that you bend the leather when it's damp and you bend it into a Yud shape and it retains that shape even when it dries out. Whatever the case, you have the Dalad and the Yud there, which together with the Shin make up the name of Hashem, Shin Dalad Yud. So those are also Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. So actually, Tosfos says, what are those doing in the Gemara over here? Before, when we discussed in the second paragraph about what you're allowed to use for tefillin, and we were discussing the question, do you have to use things from kosher animals? And we said that the batim has to be made out of the skin of a kosher animal because you have the shin on there. The Gemara didn't say over there about the straps. The Gemara mentioned you have to have a different source for the concept that the straps of the tefillin have to be made from a kosher animal, not because of the dalad and the yod. So what do you mean that the dalad and the yod are halacha moshe mitzinai? So therefore, Tosfos takes out those statements over here. And in fact, before we said that Tosfos had brought from HaKadosh Mikorbel that maybe you would even be allowed to wear tefillin shoyad into the bathroom, even though they have the yod on them. Other Rishonim disagree with Tosfos and say that, okay, they could be halacha moshe mitzinai. They're just not considered kisvei HaKadosh because they're not actual writing. They're only not. But okay, the point is, in other words, that we see that tefillin are different because they have the shin on them. Therefore, you're not allowed to wear them into the bathroom. And maybe also because they have the dalet and the yud, because those are also letters of Hashem's name. The kameya doesn't have anything on the outside of it like that. Therefore, not necessarily, can we say, so therefore, our Mishnah is allowing you to wear a kameya when it's covered with leather, and therefore, even if you have to go into the bathroom, there's no issue because the names of Hashem and the psukim and whatnot are covered. But not if it was uncovered, not if it was something where you just had the piece of paper was uncovered, then maybe you wouldn't be allowed to wear it into the, then maybe you wouldn't be allowed to wear it into the bathroom because you'd have Hashem's name or the pasuk over there on the actual piece of paper, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to wear it on Shabbos either, according to that way of looking at it.
When one of the shin of the tefillin is broken or misses a part, is the tefillin is possible?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, you have to have, it has to have the basic shape of a shin. I mean, nowadays, when the Sofrim do it, you know, it actually literally looks like a shin in the Sefer Torah, as if it was written with a quill, and I think they even put the tagim on it, although I haven't looked closely. But how much of that is necessary, Afialocha, I'm not sure. I mean, Rashi just says that you take the skin of the bias and you crease it and you make something shaped like a shin. So it not necessarily doesn't have to look exactly like a shin in the same Torah. Maybe if it's a little rounded off or whatever, it would be kosher. But I don't know. That's something to ask the Torah, I guess.
Could you find out?
Call a sofer and ask them. If you have an actual practical situation like that with your children, then ask the sofer. Okay.
Shkaya. Have a good day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.